FTN Fast Break Podcast, Thursday, January 23rd, 2025, episode 39. What is going on, everybody? Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kawhisenberg DFS, joined once again by my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. And it's just, look, man, you with each passing week here in the NFL postseason, not only are we starting off the episodes with some Bills talk, but you get more, you bring more and more Bills regalia, I feel like, onto the pod here with each passing week in the month of January. I told you, I was thinking about you on Sunday night. We had no pod on Monday because of the MLK Day slate, but we're here now. Bills, AFC title game. How you feeling, Adam?
So I told you, first of all, this is the lucky hat. And then my game day apparel has been this hat, a long sleeve blue Bills shirt, and then my awesome throwback Bills red jacket. Okay. Didn't wear that today because A, even though it's freezing out, I'd be sweating in that jacket. And B, that's just what I want to wear on game day. I'm very superstitious this time of year. Yeah. But usually, and I've told you this, I'm like a super pessimist. Like, I always think the Bills gonna lose. They could be playing anybody, right? Yeah. This postseason, I've been trying to use the power of manifestation.
Okay.
So, for instance, all last week, I said to myself and to friends and family, the Bills are winning, the Bills are winning. And I also said Lamar Jackson was going to lose a key fumble in that game, like on Tuesday. Yeah. And that happened. So, power of manifestation continues. The Bills are going to win. They're going to go to the Super Bowl. And, yeah, that's just where I'm at right now. We're turning a new leaf, and my official score prediction is 29-26 Buffalo. And doesn't mean I'm not crapping my pants every day until we get there, but I'm trying to be a little bit more positive. But no, it's exciting. It's terrifying and exciting. I just want one, man. Like I've told many people, just give me one Super Bowl. They can go 0-16, 0-17 the following year. I do not care. I'll care probably by like week seven, sure. Honestly, but I just want one, man. I just want one.
Well, I'm pulling for you, man. I'm on the kind of like, I don't know, what was it, 4 years ago now when we were on, when this podcast was called just the FTN NBA podcast, and it was you, me, Joe Metz, and we were jumping on the Bucks bandwagon that year, right, all the way to the NBA championship. So hopefully we can do the same here.
The cool thing is that unless you are a Chiefs fan, everyone's rooting for the Bills, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like everyone, especially after the refs and everything last week, especially. But I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a shitload of PTSD right now with the team we're playing and all that stuff. So,
yeah, no question. and like, look, Bill's playing the NFC Championship, but I know you're going to be damn near courtside for the Cavs and the Sixers tomorrow. So we'll talk about that. We will talk the Cavs. We will talk some Sixers. But where I want to start here on episode 39 of the Fast Break, Adam, is once again Jimmy Butler and the Heat, right? Like, we would do, and I feel like we have been over the last like episode or two, trying to just avoid Jimmy Butler and Bradley Beal talk because it's like, wake me up when there's a trade, and I'm kind of still there, at least from the Jimmy Butler side of things, but like now he's suspended again by the team, right? And this is for cause, and the cause is Jimmy Butler missed a team flight on Wednesday and then had plans to join the team, I believe, tonight prior to their game against Milwaukee here on Thursday night. And the Heat said, nah, man, you just stay home. We'll do this two-game road trip without you. And I don't know, man. Some of the way that Jimmy Butler has conducted himself in former spots has been not only entertaining, but I think commendable in some aspects with, like, of course, the infamous scrimmage in Minnesota. And I think the very fair complaints he had about Philadelphia. And then, of course, after he left, Tobias Harris over me, etc. But if I am a contending team, or even specifically the Phoenix Suns, and that we know reportedly the reason why Jimmy is so interested in Phoenix is not just to team up with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, but also reportedly Jones. Phoenix. Yeah, of course. How could I leave out Tyus? But like reportedly, Phoenix is willing to give him an extension at or near the number that he desires. And again, like we could talk about how bad of a, you know, if you listen to the Fast Break, you know how bad of an idea I think that is. And even them just keeping this together, this team together as a whole. But like, it can't be helping the perception around the league. Like, you really want to bring Jimmy Butler, like, at the first sign of him being unhappy with anything, that he's going to do something like this? Again, I don't want to discard all of the great things that Jimmy does, has in the past, and still will, I think, bring to a team, because he is, I think he's a little unique in the sense of where, like, he is a alpha personality that doesn't always really throughout his career. When has he ever been the guy? Like, a couple years here with the Heat, but like, he is a very good 1B option, or even like a 2 on a very good team. But it just, like, he is not at that point in his career anymore. He is very much on the downside here. And I don't know, man. It's do we really expect him to arrive in his new digs, and whether he stays there for half a season and a half with just his player option, or a potential extension? Do we really expect him to, for lack of a better term, like, shape up just a little bit, man? It is still a team game here.
I've gotten to the point now where I just want to fast forward to the deadline to see what happens. And especially, we'll talk about the other trade that happened involving all the draft picks. Like, that felt like a move where it's like, okay, we're trying to get Jimmy Butler. But then a second player we're going to talk about is kind of the contributing player there. And it's what could possibly hold everything up with Bradley Beal, because I believe what he said, he would be willing to waive the no trade clause for Milwaukee, or what was the other team?
I forget. I remember there's a couple names of teams that were not included. Like, I think Chicago was one where he didn't mention one way or the other. And like,
Milwaukee's the obvious one because they were close to acquiring him a couple years ago. And that was one of the teams he said. But then, as we'll get to it, but it's just like, nothing can really happen until one of the two things happens. And it feels like that was the trade with all the draft picks is something that is pushing towards Jimmy Butler. But at this point, I'm just like, let's get on with it. I'm almost more interested in, like, at this point, like, the other teams and the other players that could be moved at the deadline, because, like, I'm just kind of getting a little sick of seeing, you know, we all know Butler wants out, and then it's okay, he's not playing, and then okay, he's, like, suspended again. It's just like, trade him, let him move on, you guys move on, because at this point, like, it's clear the direction of your franchise is Tyler Hero, Bam, even, you know, Khalil Ware has been playing really well, so.
Been great.
Just move on. Let's get it going.
And it's almost like, I feel like there are very few plausible destinations for Jimmy that would be actually surprising and, like, drive further conversation around this for us. I feel like if he goes to Phoenix or Golden State or Milwaukee or even back to Philly, it's like, okay, like, it feels like now, once this finally happens, that it will just be relief that we can stop talking about it and keep moving forward. So you mentioned the trade that did go down since we last convened a week ago, and that was the Suns, what you hinted at there, what feels like the preface to a potential Jimmy Butler trade. They flip one first-round pick for 3. And so, of course, there are some protections and swaps and stipulations around here. So Phoenix, we talked about on last episode, was down to, after the Nick Richards deal, 1 first, and 1 second that were tradable. And so that was their 2031 first round pick.
And so guess what? That pick is going to be so good.
I know, right? Oh my God.
If you were running Phoenix, you would not have made this trade.
I would have blown this team up.
I was going to say, you would have made several other trades, but you would have not given up that 2031 first.
I don't think I ever would have got Bradley Beal. But again, it's very easy to sit here and say that now. So they send out their 2031 pick unprotected, and in return, Utah will send back the least favorable of the 2025 picks, Cleveland, Minnesota, Utah. Okay, so Cleveland's pick, right? Least favorable of those same 3 teams in 2027 and in 2029, but as a footnote, Minnesota's 2029 pick is protected. So Utah consolidating, right, the picks that they got from the Donovan Mitchell trade, from the Rudy Gobert trade, and some of their own, to pick up, I think, a selection that, with all 3 of the picks they're sending out being the least favorable of those 3 teams, like, Cleveland, of course, it's going to be Cleveland this year. It could be Cleveland or Minnesota in 2027. And then in 2029, that could, with how many picks Utah does have, that could end up being Utah's pick if they are good 4 or 5 mm-hmm. years from now, which there is certainly a chance that they could be. Not just a playoff team, but, you know, top 3 to 5 in the West at that point with how much draft capital and cap space they have between now and then. So I think this is the rare trade, Adam, where I think I like it a lot for both sides.
Yeah.
Because not only does this give Phoenix those draft assets to potentially throw out in any sort of trade coming up, but like it unlocks all of these drafts right now that they have draft picks in these years that they can move more picks than they previously had. So, and then, like we said, 2031 unprotected Suns pick is more likely than not to be a lottery pick, I would think. This was a very interesting trade and one that I don't think we've really seen. Like, I don't think this is replicating a past trade. This is kind of a new thing that Danny Ainge has cooked up here to try to bolster his draft capital going forward, even while he's giving up 3 picks and taking on just 1.
Feels like a trade you'd make in like a dynasty fantasy football league.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm 100% with you. When I first saw it, I was like, okay, and reading into the tea leaves and everything, knowing and understanding what both teams were accomplishing, it felt like a massive win-win. Obviously, we'll see. The more intriguing aspect is the Phoenix side, obviously, with the trade speculation. Right. But yeah, this made total sense. And I'll just say, when I saw it was at 2031 first, yeah, the immediate thought was, barring anything crazy really happening, that's going to be, because it's so weird because like we just entered 2025, but that's still so far away. Yeah. So like, yeah, the odds of that pick not being elite are pretty low. I mean, that's probably going to be one of the best draft picks that year. Obviously we don't know who these players are, but yeah, I mean, I like it for both sides, especially Utah too, because they can still add more draft capital before the deadline with maybe Colin Sexton, somebody, Jordan Clarkson. So, yeah, I think it's a win-win, and I would just continue to wait and see with Jimmy Butler.
So we also had some more rumors. Of course, it is that time of year. We are, I think, about 2 weeks, I think, yeah, away from the NBA trade deadline. So one thing that picked up steam over Monday through Wednesday, especially after that Suns and Jazz draft pick trade, was a rumor that Bradley Beal could end up in Milwaukee, as you hinted at earlier, in a massive trade, like 4, maybe even more than 4 teams, where Beal would land in Milwaukee. Chris Middleton and at least one other player would land in Miami. Jimmy Butler would end up in Phoenix, and again, at least one other team involved there. I think the most likely culprit to join a 3 or a 4 or a 5 team deal, like we've mentioned on multiple episodes now, is the Detroit Pistons, because they have some expiring contracts, including Tim Hardaway Jr. in the upper teens. They also are the team with the most cap space here coming up to the deadline. But then Chris Haynes last night, who I want to note has connections, well-established and well-known connections with not only Damian Lillard going back to his Blazers days, but also a good relationship with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Chris Haynes on Wednesday night says that the link for Bradley Beal to potentially end up with the Bucks is not true. That's not somebody that they're interested in. And while I think that makes sense, because I don't know what team would want to take on Bradley Beal and his no trade clause at $50+ million for 2 additional seasons after this one. But also at the same time, dude, like, this would not be the first time that the Bucks have kept their star players in the dark about trade discussions, because the Jrue Holiday trade, like, that blindsided Giannis, if I recall correctly. So like, I don't necessarily think that this means that Beal it's impossible, that it's not going to happen, that he ends up in Milwaukee. But, you know, Chris Haynes also could have come out and said, yeah, the Bucks are aggressively pursuing this. And it was quite the opposite. So I guess, what were your thoughts early in the week hearing about this potential mega deal that could be in the works, and then Chris Haynes pouring some water on that fire on Wednesday night?
Yeah, and obviously, I don't know how I blanked on this, but when I was remembering the teams Beal said he would waive the no trade clause for, yeah, obviously Miami, I think, was the other one because Jimmy Butler, duh. Bradley Beal's somebody I struggle with because I don't know, even like, I mean, obviously the salary cap and everything and the contract is a huge part of it, but like, even that aside, like, I'm trying to think of the team that fits him best or he fits best. I don't know if that's Milwaukee. Obviously, like, Middleton hasn't really been playing at 100% in like over a year now, and I don't know if we're going to see that from him. And then you have other teams like theoretically for a couple years now, I think a team like Philadelphia would have made sense for Bradley Beal, but now it's just like they have to really decide whether they're going to just go for it some more, or they're just in such a tough spot right now. So Beal's a player I struggle with Milwaukee, especially. Like, I don't know, like, would he be coming off the bench because a Beal Lillard backcourt would still be pretty bad defense. Beal's not terrible defensively, but, like, it's still not the backcourt defensively you'd want. Obviously, you can mask that a little bit with having Giannis and Brooke Lopez behind them. But, yeah, I think at the end of the day, we're going to have to see, like you said, a multi-team deal for these trades to happen.
And hopefully that comes, but hopefully on Monday's episode, Mike Randall and I are talking about a Jimmy Butler trade, or at least this time next week. Anything else for you on Jimmy, on the trade, on the Bucks rumors, anything surrounding this, you know, this storyline that has gone on entirely too long?
Yeah, I'm ready for it to come to an end and see what goes on. I can't even think of many other teams. Honestly, like we played the game where we were deciding the best landing spots for Jimmy. We ultimately came up with, like, you know, Phoenix, Houston, some of these other teams. But at the end of the day, like, will it matter? Like, will these teams be able to beat, you know, the OKCs or in the Eastern Conference, Cleveland, Boston, you know, even Denver, who's playing an elite level right now with the best player on the planet. So Memphis, I just ultimately... We love trade rumors. We love the speculation. We love the changing of players with teams. But I just don't even know if it's going... Like, Milwaukee, you could see maybe move the needle just because, like, you know, the East is a little bit more... I want to say open, but, you know, they don't have to do much to get that 3 seed potentially. Whereas in the West, like, is Phoenix really going to push up to pass teams like Memphis and Houston and Denver and even, you know, to a lesser extent, some of those other teams? So, well, ultimately, I know you... agree that Phoenix, it probably won't matter for them, and you would just trade everybody, which you still need to get on that, by the way.
Yeah, hey, and maybe, you know, maybe this weekend I'll blast out. We can get Kevin Durant off this team. We can get Devin Booker off this team, try to recoup some draft assets.
Get Kevin Durant to Houston.
Look, and then we're just not going to trade Bradley Beal, okay? Because you know what else is valuable? Letting him be the tank commander over the next 2 years, pulling as much draft assets as you can, and then you don't always have to trade an expiring asset, especially with the new rules in the CBA. Sometimes just getting the salary cap space is a huge win.
Yeah.
So again, it's not looking great for the Suns. And let's talk about some injury updates. We'll keep the vibes low here for a moment because the Dallas Mavericks got some very tough news yesterday. Derek Lively will miss 2 to 3 months. With a fracture in his foot. And that's Adam, scary. I don't know about you. Like, look, math, I'm not the biggest math guy, especially here at FTN, but I know that if we hit that 3 month playoffs. Part of that, and I just don't.
And it's a foot for a 7-footer.
Exactly. Lower body injuries on big guys, especially, like, you do not like to see that historically. It's just not the best outlook at a time where we're still missing Luka, and we've heard whispers that he could return before the All-Star break.
It's got to be post All-Star break, right? There's no way he comes back before the All-Star break.
You would think. And like,
but they've obviously been slipping a little bit.
They absolutely have been slipping. And that's what I wanted to note is that, like, the Mavericks, this could go, I think, more than two ways. But the two avenues towards the first round of the playoffs that I want to talk about right now are, if Luka continues to struggle, let's say he doesn't come back to the end of the All-Star break, and Kyrie's dealing with, I believe, a bulging disc issue in his back and playing through it right now, like, this could be to a point where I would say the Mavericks just get bounced in a potential play-in, because these other play-in teams are, these are good teams. Right now, Dallas would have to play Phoenix in the 9-10 game, and then they would play the loser of Sacramento or Minnesota in the second round play-in game. And they're a game and a half above the Warriors, 2.5 games above the Spurs, and like, they're just sitting on this precipice of maybe not even making the play-in. Like, there were whispers early in the week about Dallas being in the market, trade market, for another center, which didn't make much sense, I think, to anybody at the time. But now it absolutely does, because if you're trying to salvage something out of this season, like,
makes it tough too. I was just going to say, it makes it tough too, because like, say they are in the market for a center now, which would make a lot of sense. What's the archetype center you go after? Because theoretically, in this Luka offense, you would want somebody that can run to the rim, roll to the basket, catch lobs. But then, say you get somebody in that build, and Lively comes back in 2 months, and you have three centers that are practically the same. Like, yeah, you don't have somebody that can step out and pick and pop. So it makes it really tough for like the team building perspective if they do go out and get a center, because it's not like there's a million centers available, right? There's a couple that stand out for sure, but like, you have to be even more particular about who you go after. And in this offense, you would think you would want, with how much, you know, that heliocentric stuff and pick and roll, like, you would want somebody that can run to the rim. But then what if the outlook for Lively isn't as bad? I still lean towards more of closer to 3 months than two, which makes it scary for them, because he's like, he won't be regarded as a top 10, 15 center in the league, right? But,
right,
like, I noticed this last year as a rookie. He was like, they would always have him, not always, but a lot of times they'd have him like mic'd up on the broadcasts. And as a rookie, this guy is calling out everything defensively. He's like super vocal. Like, they're going to miss that with him.
There's no question. And so, like, but I did want to talk about what I think is like the potential more positive outlook here for the Mavs, is that, okay, we can hang around, right, and then we do get in 6, 7, or 8 seed. And on that flip side of these potential scenarios, Adam, how about Houston? If you do all this work, you have this upstart type of season to get a 2 seed, and all of a sudden you got to face the freaking Mavericks, healthy, Luka, Lively back, Kyrie, PJ Washington. Yeah,
I mean, we love Houston, but like, I'm not picking against Luka in that series.
Dallas is favored in that series. I'm pretty sure. Picking
against Luka. And like, even without Lively, if they have, you know, mostly healthy Luka and Kyrie during the second half, like, they're going to win a ton of games in the second half. And we saw they were the best second half team in basketball last year. So, like, obviously weren't the same team, didn't have Clay, stuff like that. But, like, if they have Luka and Kyrie, they can – I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden they were, like, the fifth seed in the West by the second half of the second half of the season.
Yeah. And then we have some more positive injury news here. First, for the LA Lakers, Jared Vanderbilt cleared to make his season debut.
Legit forgot he was on the team. Not even kidding.
Yeah. Anthony Edwards, I think, is the last time we jogged all of our memories about Jared Vanderbilt when he told him, shut up, you've been hurt for 2 years early this season, while he was sitting on the bench. But look, the Lakers need help wherever they can get it. Do I think Jared Vanderbilt makes a huge difference for their chances for seeding purposes in the postseason? No, he doesn't hurt him, but like, they've just kind of got Jared Vanderbilt. Not only Jared Vanderbilt, but like, they have, a better Jared Vanderbilt coming off their bench in Dorian Finney-Smith. So, like, I don't know, man. Like, it's good for Vandy. It's certainly not a bad thing for the Lakers, but I don't think it moves the needle for me in terms of how I view the Lakers' outlook the rest of the year.
No, and even with this, I know Vanderbilt's kind of like a 4, can play the 5 sometimes, but, like, for me, this team, if it's not a Zach LaVine trade, and, of course, we already get, like, clockwork, the mid to late January LeBron and AD saying this team isn't good enough, which is true.
Sure, they need to trade. Also, you guys, like, you guys aren't good enough.
I watched the LA game. Anthony Davis was bad in that game.
Yep.
LeBron missed, like, 4 open layups in that game.
The wall, baby.
Yeah. And also, Kawhi is, like, I don't know, man. It was very fun to watch that entire game. I'll just say that. But this team needs a trade for a center, because I still feel like Anthony Davis, a lot of the times, is at his best at the 4. Yeah. And also, just in general, you need more front court depth. Like, Jackson Hayes isn't really it. So I don't know if it's going to be a Zach LaVine trade, like where they, yeah, they obviously don't have, or they have some picks they can trade, but like, I don't think they're in the business of trying to trade Austin Reeves. So it's like, you only have a certain amount of players to be able to move. If it's not the Zach LaVine type trade, they need to trade for a five.
And like, who could you, I mean, I don't think they,
Walker Kessler, probably, but I don't think Utah would move him.
I was going to say, yeah, I was going to set up a Walker Kessler shout with DeAndre Ayton, and you probably don't want him. But yeah, I think Kessler.
I mean, for this team, I'd much rather have Kessler.
Yeah, but also then, like, are the Lakers going to want to give up enough draft cap? Because I think they have the ability to trade two firsts.
Yeah.
And then they have some swaps available as well. But, like, are they going to be willing to give up what Danny Ainge wants for a young Walker Kessler, who I think at this point, like, I don't think Ainge would sit there and say he's untradeable, but he is a promising young asset that a team that is rebuilding like probably wants to hold on to unless they get an overpay for them. And like, does Walker Kessler really fix the Lakers' issues? I do think
Robert Williams always comes to mind too as like a perfect player for a team to try to get.
Sure.
But they need to do something at the five because, you know, Davis obviously can play the five. He's one of the 10 best players on the planet, but the front court depth after that is severely, severely lacking.
Well, and the most positive injury update of the week is that we have Franz Wagner listed questionable for tonight's game against the Blazers. He did go through shoot around, so it looks like we will have, in a limited capacity, Franz Wagner back in the mix here for the Magic tonight, which they are sitting one game above 500. They are currently in the 8 seed out east, but just 3 games back of the 4. And again, they've lost 4 straight, right? Jalen Suggs going out, even with Paolo Banchero out, and Goga being out, I think may even be a bigger hindrance. Like,
yeah, it's not even just Paolo and Franz. It's been Suggs. It's been Goga. It's just been insane how it. And the fact that they're still one game above 500, it's a huge. I think it's a win for them, honestly, at this point.
I agree. And like, look, I just have my fingers crossed that they're going to stay healthy in the sense of I like watching good basketball and the Magic play exactly that. And when they are fully healthy with the depth that they have, man, I think on any given night, they can compete with any team. I still am a little bit shaky in terms of the viability of their offense in a 7-game series. But again, that's another team I think we have to watch at the deadline, and maybe a player right now that's not necessarily silent, but definitely flying under the radar.
Yeah, 100%.
So we did get a little bit of live news here, and this jogs my memory that we didn't have this in the rundown. Andre Jackson Jr. has committed to compete in the slam dunk contest at All-Star Weekend here in about 3 weeks. We also have Modest Buzelis and my guy, Adam, Steph Castle, who I think out of those three names, I think Steph Castle has to be the early favorite, but I am biased.
No, I was going to text you when I saw that, but then I forgot. But then I remembered it. You probably saw it before me anyway, so it doesn't matter. the dunk contest has slowly been making a little bit of a comeback lately, so I hope we keep it going.
Look, if we ever top LaVine versus Gordon, like, Then we're all the way back. I feel like that's our ceiling outcome just for like.
I mean, Mac McClung did a lot of good things though. Like he did a lot of good things with like.
He's also not an NBA. I mean, like officially, right? He's a 2-way guy, but like it's gimmicky.
But yeah, like but Zach so LaVine.
Is the slam dunk contest, I guess.
Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon, at those stages, like at no point of their careers were they ever stars. But like at that point, they weren't just like rookies or like 8-9 guy in the rotation. Players. Yeah, they were established good NBA players. Like we haven't really had like 4, 5, 6, whatever it is, just established good players in the dunk contest. I don't think we'll probably ever get there again. Yeah. I would like to. And my dream is still, what is it? It's four contestants, right, in the contest? Yeah. My dream is at this point is probably Ant, Zion, Ja, choose your fourth. I don't care. Just give me those three, and you can pick whoever you want for the fourth, and that's my dream.
Wemby, dunk from the three-point line?
Dunk from half court? Sure. Yeah. Like, I literally don't care who the fourth is if you have those three.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Because Ant is probably, what, top five greatest in-game dunking player of all time? I don't think that's a stretch.
Yeah, I mean, he got another one this week, didn't he? I know. I forget who it was on, but...
It was, I forget. He has, like, just a list of players he's dunked on at this point. So
he's got a catalog already. Yeah. Right? The greatest hits, and we're only a few years into his career. Games we're eyeing this weekend here tonight. I mean, Portland at Orlando, the return of Franz Wagner. I'm interested in that. And then Celtics and Lakers, this game is just a 4.5-point spread at the time of recording. So, like, the two most storied franchises in league history in a competitive game here late night, I will be tuned in. But then on Friday, Adam, the game I had written down, Cleveland at Philly, because I like watching one of, if not the best team in the league right now, in your Cleveland Cavaliers, but I'll be watching on TV. You'll be watching what feels like right next to the game. Talk to me about what you got going on Friday night.
Yeah, so for Christmas, my brother got me like just a card, and it said Cavs Sixers January 24th. Didn't buy the tickets yet because he wanted to wait and see what was going on with the teams at that stretch, because especially with Philadelphia, who knows?
Yeah.
Texted me last night, section 115, row 1, I think he said. So we're like four spots behind the court.
Yeah.
I hope Mobley plays, but regardless, it's going to be a good time. And best thing about it too is like it's the end of the week. We're taking my brothers, my nephew, who's really getting into basketball now. And it's something I can do for a few hours to not think about Sundays. That's maybe the best part about it. But no, I'm excited. Yeah.
There you go.
And like this is only like the second or third. They've all obviously been in Philly, but this is only the second or third Cavs game I've been to. And this is the first since they've had any of these guys, let alone Mitchell, like since they had Garland. Like I've been to a Cavs game since the first LeBron era. So this will be fun.
What's the attire going to be? I mean, you're a superstitious guy. You got all the Cavs gear.
Yeah, it's going to be my white Cavs hoodie with my light blue Mitchell jersey and a hat.
Nice. Saturday. And,
maybe a coat because it's like 10 degrees.
Yeah. Saturday, the second of the two Paris games out there, Pacers and Spurs. That first game tipping off here in about 8 minutes. So we will shut down the pod before then. So I can watch
Wemby's dropping 50 right
there. You would think he's going to have at least one big time game here. But Houston at Cleveland, second half of the back to back there for the Cavs, tough matchup. And we'll talk about those two teams again here in a moment. Lakers at Warriors, LeBron and Steph. I'm always tuned into that. Then Sunday, there's only one game. And Adam would say there's only one game for in a different respect, but literally only one game in the league that day. That is Thunder at Blazers. So that's the only game that you even can watch. And I'll admit here, Adam, I'll be watching the Bills.
Yes.
Stock up, stock down to close out episode 39. We'll start out with our stock downs, and I'll go first this week here, Adam. And I'm going to a game from last night. It was the Rockets and your Cavs. And my stock down is Tari Eason. Rockets up 2 in the final moments after Alperen Şengün. Loose ball fouled by Jared Allen. That gets reviewed and confirmed. Şengün knocks down both free throws. Cleveland takes a timeout to advance the ball. They inbounded to Darius Garland, who shoots a 3. And Tari Eason runs under him. So not only is the foul called, but by the letter of the law, it's reviewed and upgraded to a flagrant 1 penalty. So 3 shots for Darius Garland and the ball down 2 with 2 seconds to go. Stock down to Tari Eason, only for the moment. What's your stock down here on episode 39?
In completely unrelated news, stock down Darius Garland. Look, he had an off free throw performance in the first place. One of the guys that can legitimately get 50, 40, 90 this season. At one point, it was like his first game with 3 missed free throws in years.
Yep.
And then, as you mentioned, has a chance to potentially win the game. No player on Cleveland and maybe 5-6 players you'd rather have more at the line than Darius Garland, who's been legitimately one of the best players in the clutch in the entire league this season. So I'm watching it. I'm like, okay, he's making all these free throws. Just get one more stop on the other end, and we'll get out of here with a win. Mm-hmm. Misses 2 of 3. And look, it's not stocked down. Like, oh, what's wrong with Garland? He's still having a great season. But as much as I talk highly about the Cavs and their players, I gotta shout out when somebody doesn't get the job done. And I was surprised that it was Garland, given the fact that he is a legitimate 50, 40, 90 candidate. But just stock down. I mean, just did not think that would be and they fought back in the game. Like, they keep going to the zone defense, and it's been working for them. And they went on a huge cavalanche again. But Garland couldn't get it done at the line. It's obviously outlier, but knock down Darius Garland. Hit your free throws. Hopefully you hit him on Friday.
Yeah, man. I mean, he dropped out of the top 20 in the league in free throw percentage after last night's 3-for-8. Like you mentioned, it is
3-for-8, man.
Yeah, many years since he missed more than 3 free throws, and this is the first time since last season, I believe, that he has shot less than 50% in a game from the free throw line in a game where he took more than one free throw. Last year, he did have an 0-for-1 performance, but that just highlights how poor that was, how much of an outlier it was for Darius Garland. And yeah, man, that was a wild finish to a game that, like, didn't have a ton of action in the last 10 or 15 minutes of real time, but like the ups and downs were incredible. Closing out with our stock ups, what do you got here to close this out on episode 39?
I want to talk about a player and a team we haven't really talked about a lot because their record is terrible. Their entire lineup has been out for portions of the season, but the Pelicans and specifically Trey Murphy, even though they've had like Zion and McCollum back lately, and they're getting a little bit healthier. Trey Murphy is, and nobody's really paying attention because this is one of the worst teams in basketball, at least record-wise, and we know why. Dude, Trey Murphy in the month of January, 25 points per game, over 6 rebounds. He's shooting 93% from the field. 3-point percentage is actually a lot lower than I thought, but he is shooting about 44% from the field. He's averaging, like I said, 25 points. This season, he leads the NBA in spot-up points per game at 7.1. He's shooting 49% off spot-ups. Almost 1.3 points per possession. I don't think, like, the Pelicans are a team to kind of watch. I know there's been some chatter about Zion. Like, if for whatever reason Trey Murphy's even somewhat available, all 30 teams, I guess 29, should be calling up, because he's a really good player who is having a really good stretch right now in, what is it, like 7-8 games this January. So shout out Trey Murphy. He's playing really, really well.
My stock up here is Steve Ballmer. And Steve Ballmer, I would say three things. Number one, right? First year that we've had our own Clippers arena here in the Intuit Dome. They welcome the Lakers the other night. And you mentioned it when I joked about the wall, but they get the dub over their in-city rival there. Then Lonzo Ball, after the Bulls play the Clippers the other night, Lonzo Ball shouts out Steve Ballmer for the accommodations that he has built for the visiting teams there, including a cold tub, an expanded locker room in terms of the space that these teams get compared to the other 29 arenas in the league. And then also, and I think this one, the most commendable, donated $15 million to the wildfire relief efforts, and specifically targeting the relief efforts in Altadena, which I believe is more of your minority / underserved community there in Los Angeles. So Steve Ballmer just kind of winning all around here. So I wanted to give a stock up, which I will not always do for an owner, but I think in this instance, warranted. So that's my stock up here on episode 39. Adam, anything else for you before we shut it down and go watch Wimby entertain his countrymen?
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome by Steve Ballmer. I definitely agree with everything you said. And yeah, I just... This is the point of the week where I'm literally losing sleep over this Bills game, so I just needed to get here. But but yeah, I'm excited about Friday as well. I'm excited to be that close. One of my dreams is still to get floor seats to any NBA game, and this will be by far the closest I've been. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it feels like you'll be pretty darn close there. Well, we'll take it for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
So that'll do it for us here on episode 39 of the FTN Fast Break Podcast. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. Or if you're watching on the YouTube channel, subscribe to the channel and hit the like button on this episode. I'm back on Monday with Mike Randall, recapping everything that happens in the basketball universe between now and then. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. We'll do the same. And we'll see you back here next week for another pair of FTN Fast Break episodes. Till then, he's Adam. And I'm Zach. Go Bills. Goodbye.